There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you all along. Another couple hours of live local talk. You know how we do it. And the phone number, the same as it's been. What was the old David Byrne was saying? Remember Talking Heads? Same as it ever was. Same, it's been that way for 16 years. 343-0106. 343-0106 gets you through on the telephone. Also, the very popular text line, same number, 343-0106. And a reminder, if you're one of those cool kids out there running the FM Talk 106.5 app on your smartphone, which it's available for iOS or Android, just look for FMTALK 1065. Free to download. It's cool. It's like a digital multi-tool. You can stream the station. You can check out our show schedules, our social media feeds with breaking news. First place or podcast posts are there. Traffic maps, weather information, all that good stuff on there. But also a feature has a microphone icon on the front page. If you'll press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back on there. So check that out as well. So 343-0106 and the app to get through to the show today. Right. I mentioned in hour number two, we'll continue with what we've done at this station here for weeks, if not more than that, months, getting you ready for what's coming up on Tuesday with primary day in the state of Alabama. More interviews coming up. Nick Matranga and Greg Albritton join me in hour number two of the show. And as I mentioned, too, this hour, and you probably have some questions for this man, Executive Director at Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland, joins me. Before he and I start talking, I do want to give an update because I heard the news, national news, talk about the Texas wildfire. We've looked at, you know, we had wildfire stories here locally. I think that temporary burn ban will probably be up after 3 or 4 days of rain and people can get back to control burns around here. But what was going on in Texas is interesting to watch. And this is different than our fires here in Longleaf Forest or other pine forest. This is prairie grasslands. It's kind of that area is in between, not to nerd out too much, but between tall grass prairie and short grass prairie. Out there, I've spent some time driving through that area from up to Amarillo, up to Dalhart, Texas, and those areas is grasslands. That area has been, the fires are not the problem. The fires encroaching on people are the problem there. That area did, just like our forest, were burned. That area was burned as well. And I tell you right now, if they'll finally get some rain after that, the graze that'll come back there in Texas will be good. But watching the people, like I said yesterday, I think I was watching an Instagram feed from the Four Sixes Ranch to watch how the people deal with it there in that region, that no fire beats fire, that are setting fires around their structures to get rid of the fuel to protect them from the grassland fires is pretty interesting. So to watch that, you got the national news report about the size of this, and it's a substantial area that's burning there and threatening some areas, not a very populated area, but there are some threats out there. But to watch what individuals are doing, that's the neat thing about social media. You go out there and you see what individual ranchers are doing out there to protect their homes and pretty much what people did back in the 1800s out there and the Native Americans did time immemorial before that. So it's just something to watch out there as the breathless reporting about the grassland fires in Texas and extreme western Oklahoma pepper the news. All right, let's bring him on now. He had to listen and sit through that. It's William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
It is a lot going on. First of all, for somebody who has not familiar with what y'all do with Mobile Baykeeper, and you, let's do like your elevator talk here. Who are you? What y'all do?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mobile Baykeeper is an organization, nonprofit organization. We've been around for almost 30 years now, and we exist to defend and revive the health of the waters of coastal Alabama. And we wanted to define that a little bit more narrowly so that people know, hey, what are we trying to accomplish? And so what we say is we'll know we're successful when no one has to question if the fish are safe to eat or the water safe to swim in, when our oysters and our seagrasses recover, and our communities take responsibility for these things.
Yeah, it's, you know, William, it's something I've talked about for, gosh, even before I launched this station, in all my years in radio, it's been my soapbox, that I just say it is what makes us great. I mean, you can think about E.O. Wilson's book, Why We're Here, but why we're here, you go historically or biologically, we're here because of the water. That's why people settled here, right? And it's the thing that makes life here so great. And it seems over the years we've gotten better in some places, but it's an afterthought. This idea that you would have closures for swimming or consumption of seafood. I don't know if y'all have noticed, we can get pictures back from Mars right now. Let's keep the water clean.
That's right. We're you know, and it's great to explore the space and to do all sorts of other great scientific research.
Yeah.
But first things first, and as that last part of that vision says, you know, our communities have to take responsibility for these things. So it's not just that we rely on, of course, our federal government mm-hmm. or even state government. It's up to you and me because nobody's coming.
Right.
It's up to us to tell those folks what to do. And, you know, I have to admit, I'm not from Mobile. I'm from Tuscaloosa originally, but grew up hunting and fishing, and my grandfather was real involved with the Ducks Unlimited and mm-hmm. Wild Turkey Federation. So I grew up hearing all this stuff, and I took it serious. Got my degree in environmental engineering, thought I was going to go, you know, save the water. I was mm-hmm. focused on surface water, ended up, you know, finding out the folks that paid better were the folks that, you know, we did engineering to maybe try to get around some of these uh-huh. regulations and things like that. And so I was unsatisfied with that. A little bit more about me. Long story short, I went into international Christian ministry. I went to seminary, but in seminary, one of my long papers was on faith in the environment, and really the idea that we're a part of creation. You know, we view ourselves often as separate from mm-hmm. creation, right? We say creation care. What we mean is, well, it's this secondary thing. But no, we're a part of it. That's where our food comes from. Everything that, you know, this building, our homes, mm-hmm. those are all a part of creation, and that we're certainly using it for human flourishing. But if we don't take care of it, then human flourishing will diminish as well.
Well, we're told to be stewards.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's there. And, you know, there's sometimes people, I think, feel, and I want to get into some specifics and talk about what's going on in Montgomery right now, but the kind of the 30,000 foot view, you know, so much of the discussion, I feel, gets on these global ideas, right? And I know everything global is local, but it's almost like I admonish people that are so tuned into national politics, but forget about what goes on maybe at their council, district level, you know, municipal, county level. Same thing environmentally. I'll see people that are, you know, real, talk about these global issues environmentally, but they seem ignorant. And I mean the word literally, not mean, but ignorant, unknowledgeable about the things that they could maybe tackle right here in their backyard.
That's the beauty of the type of organization we are. So we are regionally watershed focused, mm-hmm. right? So we protect the waters of coastal Alabama. And so often we'll get people that ask us to be concerned about big global issues. And certainly I am concerned about big global or environmental issues, but only as much as they impact us here in Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes you have to say, realistically, I cannot control what they burn in China.
Yeah.
I just can't. There's
true.
Nothing I can do about that, especially right now with the little bit of influence that we have. But what I can do is start talking with local businesses. Of course, big corporations have a heavy impact along our waterways here, but they live here in our neighborhoods. Also talk to, like you said, our city, county, and state officials and say, hey, the people that you're claiming to represent here, they care about these things. And so that's what I've been up to the last few weeks. I've been up in Montgomery getting quite an education. It's been a learning process for me, for sure.
Well, you're going through the ringer in Montgomery. I know a little bit of that. We'll come back and talk more about what is going on in the legislature right now that may impact us here at a state level. It's our guest, William Strickland, Executive Director of Mobile Baykeeper, here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1220, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. This segment of the show brought to you by Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service and Parts. Yes, I've had the boat pulled up in front of the house here for the last couple of weeks, getting everything ready for some spring camping out of the boat at some of the Barrier Islands, and of course, getting ready for offshore fishing. And the parts you need for your Yamaha are available, and the knowledge you need available at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. Yamaha parts, Yamaha lube, higher standards than other parts. Make sure you get the right parts for those Yamahas. They've got the Yamaha lube required to keep your warranty, too. So if your boat's under warranty, your engine's under warranty, they've got those as well. And if you get, so Kelsey, who runs the parts department at Blue Water Yacht Sales, she's a savant of parts. Like, she knows your Yamaha inside and out. So if you're going, oh, I'm replacing a this or that, or this thing seems messed up, if you give her the serial number, the model number of the engine, you'll make sure you get the exact right part for that Yamaha, whether it's under warranty or not. And so you might get something that looks similar, like it might work. She can tell you if it will work or not. Yamaha parts all come out of Atlanta also, so you can deliver very quickly. If you call an order, this is what we're talking about with Kelsey. If you call in before 11 o'clock in the morning, Kelsey can have most of your parts the next day. And I know what that's like when you get a project, you got something taken apart on the boat engine. I've been there. You want it then, because you're trying to get it fixed then, and she gets it. And nice thing, too, is they keep a customer history on your service and parts, make it easier next time you call and go, I need a this, and they go, oh, you got one of those last year, and get it ready for you. So, I mean, give them a call at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. Talk to Kelsey and get those parts you need, because I'm doing the same thing as you, getting the boat ready for another season on the water. Phone number 476-2699, online at bluewateryachtsales.net. All right, it is a chance to talk about what goes on with our waters, but how it impacts the politics in Montgomery. Executive Director at Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland, our guest. So you've been up there in the belly of the beast in Montgomery, right?
Been learning.
Yes.
Sometimes the hard way.
It's an interesting place.
It is. You know, I'm up there. You know, we start with Blue Water Yacht Sales. I'm glad that they service the Baykeeper boats. And, of course, my boat is also preparing for upcoming fishing season. And, you know, I'm up there like you. I'm your average citizen, but I'm representing about 5,000 Baykeeper members. We got about 5,000 members that like to hunt and fish and, you know, do business with Blue Water Yacht. And but there's all these folks that seem to know what they're doing up there, and I've learned those people are called lobbyists. and I heard Senator Elliott on Jeff's show earlier, and he affirmed something that I felt early in the session. Apparently, these lobbyists are real active, and I got to tell you, I've been getting my butt handed to me up there, because I'm just wandering around saying, hey, let's help out our anglers. Let's help out our commercial seafood folks. And but I've been learning.
It is. It's you've got to figure out how to speak the language of Montgomery to get that message through. One of the bills that I saw early on when they, pre-file bills and things get rolling before session even gets started, got my attention. I think it's the Shore Act.
Yes, Safe and Healthy Outdoor Recreation, Shore Act. That's correct.
And I told the folks about it, but you do a better job than me. What is the Shore Act in layman's terms? What does it mean for local folks?
Yeah, it's going to let anglers know if their catch is safe to eat or not. So what folks often don't know, and we have survey data to prove this, is that our state does testing on fish, and they issue these fish consumption advisories. It's something that's required from our federal government that our state must do, and so it makes this information public. And so we have a program currently, but few anglers know about it. Less than half of anglers know that this even exists. For instance, the Mobile River has a do not eat any fish from the Mobile River advisory on it.
Anything down in Cold Creek or right up there at Olin.
Most of our waterways have some form of advisory. Often it's eat one meal of this per month or per week or something like that. And that's to limit the amount of toxics that enter into your body, right? And I think you and I talked about this last time we were on, of, you know, people take calculated risk. It's not saying you can't eat the fish. Some folks smoke cigarettes, and that's a risk they take. And, you know, I'll eat a speckled trout. I don't think they have an advisory on them, but I'm just saying it's going to take a lot for me to not eat that speckled trout. But I may limit myself and, of course, limit my kids.
And you have the information. It's just, if you have to give the information for somebody to be able to make a decision.
That's right. And so the specifics of this bill is that it's going to increase the signage. So every boat ramp in the state will have a sign that says, you know, there's an advisory on this water body, and here's what it is. When you buy your fishing license, it'll come with that information. It'll also create a panel that for citizens, you, me, others, to advise our agencies on what's going to work, how's it going to help us to know this information. And so some other details of what's going on currently, if you want to find it, good luck. You can go out there on the World Wide Web and try to find it and download a 37-page document that's available from our state government. Or water keepers such as us, Coosa River Keeper and others have a hotline that you can call, and it'll give you that information if you want to find it.
Okay, so that is that listed on the website?
It is, yeah. You visit mobilebaykeeper.org and you can find that.
Because, you know, I think we may have talked about it before, too. The sampling that was done on this, I was one of those early people that was sampled. Your predecessor, yeah. I would be plucking hairs for me and stuff, you know, because I consume a lot of fish. And it was interesting. The information is important. I think you're right when you said people make their own choices. But just like anything, you have to have the information at your hand. You know, if you decide to eat the burrito extreme that has 5,000 calories, you at least know it has 5,000 calories. And you made the choice to eat it.
That's right. And so, you know, to me, that's a common sense thing. As an angler, grew up eating fish. But what I've been surprised by is the opposition that this bill is.
Yeah, who's opposing it and why?
Yeah, so the two groups that I know that oppose it that are lobby groups. One's called Manufacture Alabama, and the other is the Business Council of Alabama. And this will be a theme of things we talk about. I've not been able to talk to them directly. I've put out some phone calls there, and so if you're listening, give me a call back. I'd love to hear your concerns. But I have heard concerns through the grapevine that it could somehow increase the liability that a business would have, that maybe somebody could file a lawsuit based on this information. But
the information's already there.
Exactly right. And
you're just wants to bring it to the people.
That's correct. So, you know, the difficulty people would have to find it now would be decreased. And again, I don't see how that would raise liability, as we're not pinning pollution on one particular business or not. So if there's other issues, I don't know what they are, but it has tremendous opposition currently.
That is interesting. So the sampling is being done. The state is getting this information. What the Shore Act is talking about is making this more available to citizens.
That's right.
So the pushback from people that says it would make, if there's liability, it would already be there. I mean, the liability exists whether the information gets to the people or not.
That you're saying exactly what I've been saying. But again, I'm talking to elected officials that represent us. So in the House, it's Representative Craig Lipscomb, who's really the champion of this bill, and he has not been able to get it past committee yet. But in the Senate, it's Representative David Sessions from down here in coastal Alabama, and he also is pushing the seafood labeling bill, which you talk about. So
yeah,
he's championing this transparency, kind of a theme of saying, hey, we ought to know what's happening. And
okay, so if somebody's calling their rep right now, right, and saying, hey, the Shore Act, I'm for this. You know, if somebody says, yeah, I would like the information posted to where I know, you know, I can eat two bass from here.
Absolutely.
Or five white perch, or, you know, two brim, or whatever it is.
If you want to know this information, you can call Senator Sessions or really call any of your elected officials.
But can't get it out of committee.
That's what's happening currently. At least, again, my understanding as an average guy going up to Montgomery.
That's how people have tried to explain Montgomery. That sometimes there's things that would catch like a prairie wildfire if they got to the House floor, the Senate floor, but they don't make it out of committee, so they never get that to happen.
And one other thing I'd like to point out is there is some other opposition as well, and this makes a little bit more sense to me. So the three agencies that work on this are the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, mm-hmm. and Commissioner Blankenship has publicly said he's in support of this bill. They've been involved in this
program for a long time.
Good. The Alabama Department of Public Health, which is the health officer is Scott Harris, mm-hmm. and we've worked with them and their support of this, of course, public information about health. And the last is the Alabama Department of Environmental Management. And they're the ones in charge of putting up these signs. And mm-hmm. so there have some concerns about the funding and their ability to do that. But I think we've addressed those by attaching a fiscal note that will give them more funding to put more signs up. But they also are opposing that bill currently still. With that concern of the extra work that they have to do.
I wonder if they would have just thought about this. Remember last year, y'all, when they were trying to figure out how to spend all this ARPA money, they were like, I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Maybe there's certainly some funding available.
Maybe they could help. So this first act, we'll talk about it. So if you're talking to your rep, talking to your senator, it is the Shore Act, and it is to make us anglers aware of restrictions on consumption or the
it's not just even, advising is advising, no restriction, not restriction saying, but here's telling the you, information do with it what you will.
I don't know who could be against that. Well, you just listened some, but the rest of us, I don't know who could be against that. Coming back, more with William Strickland right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and good to have William Strickland in from Mobile Baykeeper talking about this interface, which it is, between keeping our water clean and making it better for fish consumption and everything else. You can want that, but it does have to go through the political sausage maker in Montgomery. You could want it, but if you want to make a change, you got to go to Montgomery.
That's right. But it's up to us to let them know. I mean, we got to remember that they work for us. It's not the other way around. So it's up to y'all to give them a call and tell them what you think about this.
Also, this is something y'all are working on. I know that Representative Chip Brown out of 105 has been on talking about it. I guess right when session got started, and he actually texted me about it today, the Seafood Labeling Act, when he kind of laid it out, not just the consumer information like you were just talking about, but he was saying what we do with foreign aid money and other places to compete back against our local commercial fisheries. It's kind of the dumb stuff we do as a country sometimes. One hand doesn't know what the other one's doing.
That's true. And sometimes, you know, people, when you're working on things, we're going to be labeling seafood. So that's like government getting involved in business. People think of it that way. What Chip did a great job pointing out, I heard him during the House floor session, is really what we have is we've got big government and big companies working together against your average person, right? Yeah. And so what he's doing as your representative is stepping in and saying, no, let's make this right for our commercial fishermen who, you know, they're catching it from every which way. Yeah. We've got low to no tariffs on this imports, and we're also sending out federal money to help put up some of these farms. And it's interesting, I spent a lot of time in India, my previous work, and stayed for about a month. We lived in the upstairs of a kind of a church building, and it was on these prawn farms.
Okay.
And I mean,
so you've
it was,
seen them. I've heard of them. I've seen the YouTube video. But
used to be rice paddy, saltwater intrusion, little ingenuity turn them into. And it's funny, some of these villagers, they didn't know much English, but they knew the word red lobster. So they would be hollering at you. They see a Western guy, red lobster, you know. So, yeah.
But the part of this that Chip was talking about that I don't think a lot of us knew is the amount of money our government, his federal government, has spent to go abroad and give the technology and the money for people to start producing prawn farms, or you pick the, you know, pick the import, to then sell back in the United States when we have people that are American citizens and taxpayers that are working hard to try to sell that thing at the price that it would cost to produce it in the United States.
Correct. And I know these shrimpers, salt of the earth people, been doing it for generations. And as I said, they're catching it from all kinds of directions. Number one, we've got that where this dumping, they bring this seafood in and it undercuts our price. But really what it does is it takes our eye off the ball of creating more shrimp. And so we'll talk about another bill here in a minute that can do that. But we're not so concerned about habitat when we're even making policy on these things. What happens is the commercial guys will have these limits put on them, because us recreational fishermen want to make sure that there's plenty of fish. We want the fishery to be healthy. There's fight between recreational and commercial.
Yeah, I've been part of that for a long time.
And the restaurants are, of course, they're trying to make a living too, and you can buy these shrimp for this amount as well. And so we've got a supply and demand issue with reduced amounts of shrimp in our waterways. You've got imports coming in that'll be farmed and full of all kinds of contaminants. And then we don't have the transparency to let folks know where it's coming from.
And that's the key. I mean, it's very similar to that Shore Act, because understanding what Representative Chip Brown had said, it's not to say you can't sell those foreign prawns or whatever in there, But you need to let people know what they're buying. If it's imported, it's imported. You tell the people. If it's local Alabama shrimp, there's been all carrot, not stick, I think. I mean, because Alabama seafood has been pushed in the marketing campaigns and eat local seafood and all that. But there's no teeth to this thing to say you got to tell people what they're getting.
Oh, yeah. And there is a law where you supposedly you go to a restaurant, you ask, hey, where is this from? And they have to tell you.
Yeah.
And if you've ever done that, you know your poor waiter or waitress, they have no idea this is from.
They're just trying to get your table and the next table.
And to be honest, the restaurant probably doesn't know where it's from as well because they're trying to run a business. And so what this does is those that provide the seafood have to let the restaurants know now. So this bill, I say now, this bill has passed the House, and now it's on to the Senate. And again, Senator Sessions
and y'all,
is going to represent
passed the House unanimously.
Absolutely,
I just saw the vote. So, I mean, it was – and that – quite often does not happen in Montgomery. It passed unanimously.
It did. It was a and so if you were looking to call somebody, you know, you can call your representative to say, let's pass the Senate, but call Representative Brown and thank him. You know, these guys don't get thanked all that often. You know, he did his job. This is what he's supposed to be doing. But I find running an organization, you got to thank people for doing their job well as well. So give him a call and tell him thank you for representing your interests.
Absolutely. You mentioned another bill as we're talking about shrimp and this the Living Shoreline. It is the Joe Faust Living Shorelines Act.
Yeah, so it's honoring Joe Faust, who represented coastal Alabamians for a long time and was the first guy to kind of come up with this idea. But Jennifer Fiddler, Representative Fiddler, is carrying this bill in the House, and it's House Bill 215, for those of you that are wondering. Really, all it does is reduce the regulatory burden of those folks that want to put in a living shoreline. Now, a living shoreline, really, it's hard to describe outside of comparing it to a bulkhead or a seawall. Because
it's a not bulkhead shoreline.
It's all right. It's that's kind of the definition. It's just not a bulkhead. So a bulkhead, and if you have one, that's great. Nobody's asking you to rip it out. It's just going to give you the ability to choose something different. Next time it is, you have got to fix it. Because if you have a bulkhead, you know, it erodes. Mm-hmm. You got to pay a bunch of money to get it replaced. And really, you know, that erosion you're seeing is just the tip of the iceberg. When that wave energy hits your seawall, it really is eroding what's there in front of it.
Yeah, with a Coriolis effect or something they call it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it scours.
And so you've got that scouring happening, but it's killing all your subaquatic vegetation, which holds all these critters that I love to catch, mm-hmm. but also all these shrimp that we have. So all these juvenile animals need a place to hide.
Is there any research been done on the, you know, I think we have 68 miles of shoreline for Mobile and Baldwin counties or something like that. I think close to it. How many miles of that are bulkheaded, you know, versus a living shoreline? Like,
I'm certain I could come back on the show with that information. I don't have it off the top of my head.
It'd just be interesting if you'd say, you know, with in this kind of, whether it's brackish or full salt, spartina grass or whatever, produces per foot X number of, you know, shrimp.
I have some of that information for you.
Okay.
So what we do know is that about 85% of our original or historic seagrass acreage is now gone. So we're dealing with 15% of the original habitat or the first measured habitat for these critters to grow up in, right? But we do know that when you convert from a seawall, a hardened shoreline, to a living shoreline, you see about a 96% increase in shrimp.
Whoa.
So that's about doubling our shrimp population just by converting to that. Now, some other benefits for those of you that own land is, and I'm selling living shorelines, we'll get back to the bill in a minute, is that you're dealing with less erosion. So you have less maintenance over time. It may be more expensive depending on what sort of living shoreline you want, but you go in and you replace it with marsh grasses and some wave breaks and put your little pocket beach in for kids to play in. And you've got a more beautiful, more livable living shoreline that over time is going to require less maintenance. And so, you know, it sounds, the word natural comes to mind when you think of these things, but currently it's more expensive to permit a living shoreline versus a hardened shoreline.
It seems counterintuitive.
Well, I think it's just a matter of this has been the popular thing, and so nobody's looked at this. And so Representative Fiddler is representing your interests here and really trying to reduce regulation, and of course it's going to help everybody. If you don't live on the water, it's still going to help you because it's going to increase our fish population, our shrimp population. Again, driving up that supply, which could hopefully drive down prices of our seafood.
Yeah, I mean, and everything that comes, you know, from shrimp, the things that, you know, I mean, speckled trout, you know, eat a bunch of things, but shrimp, pretty popular on their list. More, you know, more bait means more fish. You know, I guess the idea of bulkheads, was that pushed because they thought it was going to be a deterrent to erosion? I mean, but you're right, it erodes behind and in front of a bulkhead most times you see them.
Yeah, again, I don't know the history of this, but it makes sense to me. I know that when something, you got erosion happening on your shoreline, and you go, well, I'm just going to put a wall up here, mm-hmm. and that's going to stop that. I mean, right. That makes sense. What we, you know, understanding the physics of that is takes a little bit more than your average person's knowledge. And over time, we've learned. And if you've had a bulkhead, you know, mm-hmm. you got to replace that thing or repair it. You got to stay on top of that maintenance.
You know, if we could make the permitting at least equal, let alone, I love ideas where you don't force people to do something, but you incentivize. Like, so there's you see it a lot in mitigation and all those kind of things. But if you just incentivize, I think a lot of people would say, man, if it's not going to cost me a gajillion dollars to do this, why wouldn't I do this? You know, make, let people choose to do it if they.
Well, I want to make sure we're clear on this bill is doing what you said. It's going to just make it equal in permitting burden.
Get it neutral between the two options.
Exactly. Okay. Speaking for Baykeeper, yeah, our goal is that all of our shorelines are living shorelines and that it becomes a keeping up with the Joneses situation where, hey, you're not yep. cool unless yes. you have a living shoreline, right? It becomes waterfront owners are going, oh, man, you got that bulkhead over there.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm starting to think you're going to be part of the HOA anymore.
Well, and also just taking it straight consumptive, if it's holding that much more bait, the light hanging over the water on somebody's pier over living shoreline is going to have more fish under it than the one with the bulkhead. Or if I'm looking for somebody's front of their place to go flounder gigging, come along, I'm going to go, there could be more fish at more flounder living shoreline than there is going to be at the bulkhead.
Absolutely. And so as an angler, that's really attractive to me. But as the leader at Baykeeper, turbidity is one of our biggest problems in Mobile Bay. And so this seagrass Preach. Loss is due a lot to turbidity, some low oxygen and other things, but these living shorelines are going to settle a lot more of that sediment that's kicked up regularly from all the dredging that happens, mm-hmm. stormwater runoff, these big ship wakes that come in, and so it's going to protect our shorelines, have less sediment and more water clarity as well. And water clarity does not necessarily mean health. You know, these other pollutants that
right.
we have don't show up when you see them, but also when you have marsh grass and seagrass, it creates a filtration system. So therefore,
but doesn't that start a cascade effect? If you can clear, and it doesn't solve some of the problems in pollutants, but if you clear the water up, then the grasses can grow deeper, more places for oyster.
That's where I was going with it. Is you know, the ecosystems, it's all connected, and so if you have more vegetation, it filters out naturally. And we still want to reduce our inputs, but if you have a sewage spill over here and there's marsh grass and seagrass all in between, you're much less likely to have the effects a little bit further downstream.
Well said. And this, before we go to the break here, a ton of text coming in, but this one specifically said, I need info about living shorelines immediately. Where do I get info on living shorelines?
Yeah, so there's a few companies that do these kinds of things. I can think of a few, and you're going to have to Google this because I don't have their websites off the top of my head, but Brett Webb does a great job in living shorelines. Eric Sparks is another, and the third will be Tom Hutchings.
Okay.
All those folks do a great job and are working on some pretty big projects in private property up and down Mobile Bay right now.
And so could people get, if they're just riding down the road right now, didn't jot those down, can they go to the website? Can they call y'all? I mean,
you know, that's a good idea. What we ought to do, we don't have this right now, is we could put some of those more popular contractors that are doing living shorelines, again, like you said, to incentivize folks. If you go, you're on our website and you want to make a change, that we want that information to be available.
All right. This one, whatever became of the class action lawsuit of the Olin chemical better than two decades ago, was potentially the source of the mercury poisoning from McIntosh to the Gulf. As a former resident, I filled out a lot of paperwork asking about my consumption of wildlife from the area. Whoever you are, text. Oh, that's Brian. I end up doing the same thing. I had to talk about how many bass I eat. But yeah, do you know where that stands, or is there anything?
The Olin lawsuit?
Yeah.
No, I don't know that information, but I can certainly find out. I do know that when we're dealing with mercury, there's three main inputs, but the biggest is atmospheric. And so what, when I mentioned before, I can't control what China burns or any other place in the world, that mercury gets up in the atmosphere and it rains down and it stays in our waterways. These heavy metals are difficult to break down over time. Another is that we have some mercury just in our geology. So there's always going to be some
amount
of mercury.
There's a natural amount.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the third is what we're producing here. And so what I will say is when it comes to compared to other states, we're no slouch in mercury inputs. You know, we're putting our fair share of mercury into the water. And that's something that we can control as Alabamians, is asking our corporations and our state to say, hey, we want less mercury and other heavy metals. These advisories are not just about mercury. They're about other chemicals as well.
All right. Coming back, more with William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, jump right back into it here with William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper. Question number one from the text line, or comment here from the section, said, address the sewer or be quiet. I'll edit what he said. Or be quiet. This is ridiculous. Taxpayers supposed to build pocket beaches for kids to play in sewer. My God, make it make sense.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that question very much. And first off, I want to address, I think, is a misperception of what we do at Baykeeper. We are not a regulatory agency. We are not, and when I'm advocating for living shorelines, I'm not advocating for tax dollars or for your money to go to that. I'm talking about property owners having the ability to do that if they want to. Baykeeper is a privately funded nonprofit, and so we represent your interests, and we are on the sewage case. We expend a lot of our time and energy tracing down these sewer flows, overflows. It's raining right now.
Yeah, so we're going to get a notice here.
It's going to be hot, and we're out there testing all the time and putting pressure on these utilities to do something about it. So we have won a few lawsuits on this, and we're going to continue to look into, and I say look into, that's not strong enough. We're doing testing in order to build cases to get these utilities to do what we need.
But you also get that information out. I've talked about this in the past with folks. They can go to the website and get a check-in on if they're getting ready to go swimming or whatever.
Yeah, you can go. We have our swim guide, which lets you know if the water's safe to swim in based on bacteria or not.
And I appreciate that.
Certainly, we wish we could do more. And so if you're looking to get involved, you know, of course, we want citizens to do it themselves. They don't have to work through Baykeeper to address these issues, but we do have some expertise and have had some successes getting utilities to do the right thing. So if you want to address the sewage overflows, come get involved with us. You know, drop me a note in our Facebook chat or something like that. But also, you know, become a member. There's only one way to get things done. I can't hire more staff if I don't have more members to get it done. We do want to represent you. And we are also advocating for... There's lots of money available for these utilities. MAWS, Mobile Area Water and Sewer, actually does a really good job of getting that funding. We're not satisfied with where they're at, and they're not satisfied with where they're at. They're updating that infrastructure all the time. In their state of Alabama, they're doing a really good job of taking advantage. It's these smaller utilities that either don't have the know-how or maybe they just don't have the will to apply for this money and get it, both state and federal funding. Again, it's your tax dollars that's set aside for sewage overflows. And, you know, today we'll see who's addressed it and who hasn't based on the rain.
I know. And we'll get those emails here shortly. This texture says, Sean in Baldwin County, ask if there's been any further movement from the EPA on the Berry Steam Plant coal ash problem.
Yeah, so I started with this theme of not having knowledge, being shut out of rooms, and I think this is the same thing that applies here. So we certainly get more information than your average citizen, but on this case, the latest headline was that the power company plans to recycle the majority of its coal ash. But I want to point out a couple of things in that article. First of all, I mean, we celebrate this. That is that's an ideal solution, that they can turn that ash into something useful, that it can go and work for our economy. They can sell that and it will reduce the cost of moving a lot of it. So a huge win for people that like water and for human health, protect human health here in coastal Alabama. However, in that article, you may notice it's the company that's set to do the recycling that has all the positive quotes about we're going to recycle all of it as close to 100% as possible. And the power company is a little bit more reserved, or a lot more reserved. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you know, our plans are to still cap in place, that we are going to recycle some of this. So just for those of you that don't know, they're saying that they're going to recycle 700,000 tons of coal ash per year starting in 2026. That sounds like a lot until you understand there's 21.7 million tons of the stuff up there. So if you do the math, it's going to take 30 some odd years to complete that task. And there is a deadline from the EPA that all these coal ash sites around the country be taken care of by 2034. So again, do the math.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't work. Yep. So there's negotiations going on between the EPA and the power company. We are not included in those talks. We are certainly hopeful that there is a legally binding outcome. And we're not against extending that deadline, giving the power company more time to take care of this problem, because it seems like they've got the idea that, yeah, keeping it there is not our best solution. If we can recycle this stuff, it'll protect human health. And, of course, then they can make some money off of that as well.
Absolutely. I can't believe an hour's gone so fast. I've got more questions. The audience has more questions. So my question to you is, when are you coming back?
You just send an invitation.
All right. We'll do it. And people want to get signed up to whether they're checking the swim advisory, signed up as a member, or see what y'all are doing. Where do they go to
MobileBaykeeper.org is the best place. And, of course, you can follow us on any of the popular social media channels.
Now, William, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. License Commissioner Nick Petranka joins us. Also, State Senator Greg Albritton, who's running in AL2. And that and your calls and texts at 343-0106.